Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hey fans, today's guest is Lisa Wilson. She is an elite athlete, a hammer thrower in the sport of track and field, and was recently a competitor in the U.S. Track and Field Olympic Trials, where she came in fifth place. So today we're going to talk about her experience with that, her journey to the trials, and so much more. A little bit more about Lisa. She competed track and field in college in all the throwing events, shot put, discus, hammer, and in her senior year, she was named the UMass Female Athlete of the Year. As she's continued competing post-collegiately, she was recently named the USA Track and Field of New England Athlete of the Month in April 2021. Over the last few years, between 2014 and 2019, she qualified for USA Track and Field Indoor and Outdoor Nationals multiple times. And she did qualify for the 2016 Olympics as well, but her journey this year and her experiences this year are far superior, as we're going to talk about. And another small fun fact about Lisa is she's actually a friend of mine. She is a former teammate since we both competed at the University of Massachusetts Amherst on the track team. And beyond being a friend and a teammate, we even lived together her senior year, my junior year. We lived together and we had this crazy house off campus where we had six girls. In one bathroom, all under the same roof.
And I would hide in my room all the time. These are the facts.
It was a crazy, wild house. Yeah, six girls in one bathroom is just difficult.
Can we comment that there's a shower built in the basement and I'm the only person that ever used it, I'm pretty sure.
I know. Since we only had one bathroom, we somehow built a shower in the basement. But yeah, I never used it. I didn't go down there.
I tried it before everyone else moved into the house over the summer. It wasn't that great, just to be clear.
Yeah. So it's so exciting to catch up with Lisa as a friend, as an old teammate and roommate, and also just her recent crazy exciting news of the Olympic trials and a huge PR that she had there. Should we dive into that first, Lisa? I feel like we should.
I love bragging, so yes. Yes, I think.
Okay. let's just dive into the Olympic trials since it was so recent. Yeah. So when did you get your qualifying mark where you knew that you were going to the Olympic trials?
Definitely. So I'll give a little fun background story on that. And I'm sure we'll dive in a little more about like how I came. I mean, I've been throwing for, gosh, over a decade now, which is wild to think. Fun fact, I was the oldest hammer thrower competing. So
I read that. And I was like, she's not old.
I am 33. I'm not embarrassed. But I think the average age, my boyfriend did the math, is 23 of the athletes that were competing in women's hammer. So,
wow.
So I'm old and I like it. So I hadn't been competing for a few years, and I had randomly last summer picked up a hammer. I've been strength training while I wasn't competing. One of my buddies was doing a summer, end of summer meet with his college kids. And I was like, oh, I'm going to pick up a hammer at the end and see what happens. And I threw over 62 meters, which was kind of like, that's really good for not touching a hammer in a long time. So on the ride home from that, my boyfriend kind of looks over to me. He's like, he's super nerd. So he's doing all the math out. He's like, you know, that's only like 5% from your PR. That's kind of significant. I'm like, don't give me hope. I don't even want to think about competing. Like, this is September last year. This isn't that long ago.
Gosh.
So we ended up deciding, let's go for it. Why not? Let's see what happens. So I ended up in the fall. There's this new facility called 12th Rock I've been working with work-wise and just my personal life throws-wise. And I went to that meet to compete in the fall. First meet, I did okay through like, I think 64 or something. And I came back a couple weeks later. And this is going to sound crazy. There's more details you didn't know about. Before that meet, I'd actually been diagnosed with cancer. I had thyroid cancer. So this was kind of like, we're going to just go all out, see what happens. I have surgery in a couple weeks and whatever happens, happens. I ended up on my first throw hitting, they marked it at 68 meters. They took it back eventually because the measurement was wrong. But through 68 meters, I start crying because that's the trials qualifying mark. My previous PR was 66 meters from 2015.
Yeah.
Never come close. So I'm just bawling my eyes out. They end up saying it was mismeasured, but I still get a 67 meter throw that day. And I was like, this gets you into trials. So we're going to plan. Bought all my flight, bought all my tickets within a week, had my surgery, and like a week later, or 3 weeks later, I think it was. And then we just hope to come back from that and plan to throw further. So it was in the, it was less than a year ago, I decided to try for this again.
This is an insane year.
Yes.
Insane year. Yeah, I did read that you were the oldest one there, which I was, again, just kind of like, no, but she's not old. Like, that's crazy. But it did kind of highlight, you know, because you were, you know, in college, you did all the throws, right? So, and I kind of always associated you a little bit more of the shot put.
Yeah, I sucked at hammer in college. Until my last meet of my senior year, I hated hammer. Despise it. So I was a late bloomer.
Yeah. You had a lot of success in shot put in college. And then you went on post college to do other things, you know, with your degree and things like that. And I knew that you continued to train, but it was very sudden, all of a sudden this year, of you just really excelling. And what a wild story with, you know, the cancer diagnosis, which I'm so sorry to hear about, but to say, let's do it. Is it done? The surgery?
Yeah. Cancer, everything removed. There's thyroid. So you can see I have this beautiful scar. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's gone. I got really fortunate when they found it. It was random. I just asked them to check my thyroid out of nowhere. And within 2 days, I went to many doctors because they found it right away. And that was that. So I'm very fortunate.
Yeah, for sure. And to have that health scare, to have that stress, to go through a surgery and to still be performing your best all year.
It was cool.
Crazy. Yeah. And so this, yeah, just what a wild ride. So did anything change like with your training when it was this like, okay, we're going to the trials now. Like how did your level of intensity with training change throughout this year?
Yeah. So I would say, so a little further back background from 2012, when I graduated with my master's till about almost all the way to 2017, my only goal and dream was trying to make the Olympic team. That's what I was training for full time. I worked odd jobs just so I made just enough money to pay rent and to train. That's what I did. Now, fast forward 2017, I pretty much retired. A lot of life stuff happened. And by like within a year, I got my full-time job. So I work full-time. I work like 9 hours a day, normal stuff, like normal adult. So my training really has to work around that. I'm not willing to give up my really good job for training. So I'm one of the weird people that throwing is always on top of my mind, but it's definitely my secondary thing right now. So I would say for the last couple of years, I've been doing lots of strength training. My boyfriend who does all my programming, not a thrower. He was a sprinter and now is really into powerlifting, but he does all my programming. Before we decided that I was going to really go for it with throwing, I told him I was injured every year. I just always injured with strength training. Like the funny thing I like to always tell everyone is that like every thrower is supposed to back squat. Well, back squatting injured me every year. So we finally found a program that got me injury free. So when I decided to start throwing, the goal was just stay injury free and survive a whole year. And that's really, that was what made the difference. But training wise, I'm extremely low volume thrower. I throw two or three times a week if I can. I lift only a few times a week outside of my job. And I don't do that much higher intensity, but I'm not doing as much training just because I can't.
But I think that speaks volume of like what's going to make a successful athlete is staying healthy, right? Staying injury free. And so if that means training lower intensity, lower volume, but you're going to have better quality throws, then that's what matters, especially in a sport like track and field, where it's like one throw matters. It doesn't, you know, that's all it takes.
Yeah.
So if you can stay healthy enough for that one throw. And yeah, so 2012 to 2017, when it was your goal and your mission. And am I correct that you did qualify for the Olympic trials in 2016 or really yeah. close to it? You did qualify.
I did. It was a horrific showing. I'll tell you a quick funny story on that. So what's really cool is when you're at big track meets, people go to watch and they don't really know what's happening. They don't know what's a good distance, what's not good. So I remember my last throw at Olympic trials in 2016. I did not throw far, but I was like, I want people to cheer for me. So I just raised my hands up in the air and all these people start yelling. I'm like, yay. I think I came in like 21st. It was not good, but I felt special. So we can move on.
That is hilarious.
It was fun.
What a fun way to like, when you know you didn't really perform well, but just to act like you did
and have fun.
And have fun with it. Oh, Lisa, I love that. And this is just highlighting. I'm so happy talking to you again because it's just bringing back so many memories your energy and your happiness. And actually a really hilarious point about, because I, you know, I, when I watch throwing, I don't know until they tell me the distance. I'm not an expert. Like I've been in track and field and watching it for years, but I don't know. And so really hilarious thing. I went on your Facebook page when I was following you. I think it was your dad watching you on TV. Oh. Is that the video that he posted?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a video on your personal Facebook page of a recording of your dad watching you at the Olympic trials and watching your throw. And he screams with excitement before you even let go of the hammer. He knew it before you even let go of it. He said, that's 70. He was like, that's 70 meters. I know it. And he starts cheering. I was like, she didn't even let go of the hammer yet. Like he knew it right away. And that's well, obviously he must have known by your technique and your power and just your flow and everything before you even let go. And you did too, because your reaction right when you let go of it, you knew.
Yeah. It was I'm going to cry thinking about it. It makes me emotional. It's funny because I actually, prelims day, I mean, that was the scariest day of my life. I barely made finals. I was nervous, wasn't being comfortable, wasn't having fun like I usually do. And I wasn't throwing that well. I had the best practice of my life going into it. So like prelims, I was like, the next day I was like in this deep depression in between. So prelims were on Thursday. We had a day off. Then we had finals on Saturday. So like Friday, I was in like this deep depression of like, I've been throwing the best I ever have. I almost didn't make it to finals. Like I was terrified. And going into finals, like I had to realize I just needed to calm down and like have fun, like cheer for the other people. Cause that's what I do. I enjoy being there, and I wasn't throwing that well, just from what I've been feeling. The big thing is with hammer is such a feel event. So like you can feel when things are good, you can feel when things are bad. I was feeling bad, but having fun. So when I had that one throw, I was like, ooh, I finally did it. I'm going to throw 70. And I'm like, you know me, I'm giddy. I'm all over the place. And I'm like hopping around like, oh my God, did I do it? And then it finally pops up. It was amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. You, like I said, watching you, you knew right away that it was good. And then seeing that video of your dad afterwards, he knew right away.
Yeah.
So yeah. So it was, just correct me if I'm wrong, 70.3 meters.
70.9
meters. How dare I? 70.9 meters, a PR for you.
Yep.
And fifth place.
Yeah. Which is crazy. I competed when I needed to. I did it.
Showed up when you needed to.
Yeah.
The fifth best hammer throw in the country.
It's insane. And it's fun because there's so many girls there. I haven't hit the Olympic standard yet. I'm hoping to do that in the next couple of years. But I mean, it's, you got to compete when you're there. It's there's a lot, all the, almost all the girls in the finals of the finals have hit the Olympic standard. So I'm just kind of like this little fish trying to navigate, hoping I can place high. I couldn't have imagined something better. Fifth was the most ideal situation for me because the top four girls are just, they're incredible. They're the best in the world. It's like a whole different world, but just, yeah, it was amazing. I can ramble all day.
Yeah. And I just, again, just what a story of like, you know, allowing yourself to take a step back after 2017, focus on some other things, focus on just health, a little, if we can say that word, you know,
100%. Yeah.
Being injury free. And then also at the trials, you get there and remembering after semifinals, like, or after prelims, to just remember, like, be me, have fun, you know, don't, and that's what makes you perform your best. And yeah, it's absolutely beautiful.
That was amazing.
So what now? What now?
Well, it's funny because I was going to try to do one more meet this summer, but I waited too long because, you know, as an athlete, you have like a period that you kind of set for a peak. So I felt like after trials, I was like, if I throw within the next week, I think I could actually get over 71. I think I have that potential right now. But unfortunately, there was just nothing I could find. So I was trying to do a meet next week, but I've been practicing for the last week. I think I'm just like the emotions ran the highest. And now it's kind of like, you did exactly what you wanted this season. Take a step back and rest. So I am going to try to go for 24. We're figuring out my plan right now. And it's just a crazy system that like it's U.S. women's hammer throw is the best in the world. So it's like it's a tough situation that you know you're going to have to throw as one of the top in the world if you want to make the team. So we're going to try. We're going to see. We're going to have fun. Not change anything big. And I mean, my boyfriend's big thing, like he does everything but my throws training stuff, or excuse me, throwing technique stuff. His big thing is the game plan of this year was do your best. I told myself, I just wanted to go to Olympic trials and come in last. That was my initial goal last year. It was like, I just want to go. I just want to say I compete at the new stadium. Now we've obviously shifted our goal, but the same adage, do your best. That's our goal every day. Do your best. Leave knowing you did your best. So we're going to try. We'll see what happens and enjoy it. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So some things that helped you get to this point, you talked about changing up your strength training. That was huge for injury prevention. And you have your boyfriend, which you've mentioned, is a strength and conditioning coach. And so he's helping you with that programming, right?
Yeah, definitely. And then during the pandemic, I got really fortunate. So I work for MF Athletic and Perform Better. So I actually buying a new house last year, one of our priorities as a couple was we need to have a gym at our house. This is what we want. So I got this huge empty basement when I bought my house last year. We built a basement gym. It's heaven. I love it. I can play music. I got TV. It's like a little paradise. And I mean, for me personally, that set me up for success. That was a big part of it. Able to work from home, work out in the basement, cook almost every meal at home. I mean, that set me up for success. I was very fortunate with all that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. And that was another thing I was obviously going to ask about is like the role of nutrition in your training and your performance. How important has that been for you?
So it's a little tricky with throwers because obviously we're generally larger people. So we're eating a lot more food. We have a little more leeway than I would say with typical like runners or different style of athletes. We get a little more, you know, we can go for the juicy burger more than once a week where not everyone can do that.
Yeah. Well, I do that too, Lisa. Oh, and I'm not a thrower.
You should be then. See, it's all the plan. So it's kind of funny because obviously I knew nutrition's your thing. So I've been trying to think back. I was like, how did I evolve with nutrition over the years? And I was actually thinking back to college and we did at UMass, we did have a nutritionist at school. And I remember when I think it was my junior year. I had a really rough sophomore year. There was a lot of expectation on me and I was disappointed with myself. So one of the things that was offered was, why don't you try going to nutritionist? See if that's one thing you can work on. So of course we're talking, God, this is how old are we? This is back in like 2008-ish. So information, very different back then. the job is treated very differently. So all I remember...
I'm biting my tongue.
Yeah, I know.
To think about what she said to you.
Day one, I go in, we discuss what I eat, blah, blah, blah. And she looks at me and says, we're going to cut out cheese completely. And I'm like, cheese is one of my favorite things. She went, you have to cut it out if you want to get better. And I said, well, I'm not going to, and I will never talk to you again. And that was it.
Good for you, Lisa.
It was just like, I'm not going to not eat cheese. Like, and now I've been a personal trainer. I'm not going to say I'm a pro nutritionist or anything, but I have a good grasp. And all you have to do is be like, why don't we eat a little less cheese? Why don't you do one slice instead of two slices? Like, if that's the direction she wanted to go. But again, different information, totally different time.
Yeah, different time. And I also had, I wouldn't say a similar experience, but just, this is not speaking poorly of this woman, but it was a different time. She wasn't a sports dietitian. And you're not alone, Lisa, with that experience of meeting with a dietitian and having it not be a good experience. Very sadly, I want to speak very highly of my profession, but the issue is the difference between an athlete and an athlete's needs going to see a dietitian. You really want a sports dietitian, because if you're working with a dietitian who's used to working with diabetes, heart disease, just chronic diseases, which is admittedly how most dietitians are trained, like our undergraduate degree focused on that stuff. And so for me, it was only through pursuing, you know, a master's degree and then advanced certification and then working directly with high level athletes that it's like, I can kind of undo some of the learning that happened. But so many athletes have that experience, unfortunately. And I just want to stress the importance of like finding a sports dietitian. But I think a decade, more than a decade ago, like there weren't, because actually when I was studying nutrition and I told my teachers I want to be a sports dietitian, they said, there's no jobs for that. So you probably shouldn't do that. And I was highly discouraged from it.
That's crazy, because that's huge now.
it's huge now. There's still, I will admit, there's still difficulty getting jobs in it for, you know, I'll just say, for example, like, have you ever had a sports dietitian?
No.
No. And you just went to the Olympic trials, right? So there's still limited like full-time jobs. And that's, you know, I'm just going to take a moment on the podcast to like, you know, stand on my pedestal and say, that's why when there are people who do what I do and are available virtually for consulting, like, you know, search for people like that, because, you know, there are resources. You just might have to go find them yourself. Yeah. Right.
And it can make a difference. If you want to be great, you got to take those steps. It's true.
You have to do it on your own sometimes. Yeah.
A lot of times.
So you did not cut out dairy, which was good. A good decision for you.
Yeah. But I was just thinking about that back from college. Like, that's the first nutrition thing like I remember. And then obviously like the big thing, like have your protein. In college, when we were in college, learning about creatine, like, is that a drug? Can you take creatine? And like, it's just, yeah, it's good for us. Like, so those, I just remember those two big things growing up. And, you know, fast forward to now, I think the big thing that I don't do a super strict diet. It's just, it doesn't work for me. I'm a creature of habit. I find what I like. I mean, I can tell you pretty much exactly what I eat every day. I have protein pancakes with fat-free syrup. And then I have a banana and I make my latte as you see me drinking. And then at lunch, I'll have either like some rice with tuna or chicken, like something like that, a smaller meal. I eat smart food as my snack through the day. And then at night, I'll have, depending if I've hit my protein intake, I have a certain pasta that has high protein. I'll do pasta, tablespoon of butter, Parmesan cheese. And then if I need more protein, I'll add a little bit to that. And then if I haven't hit my calories for the day, I have an ice cream. So it's not like... Awesome. It's not super strict. I have my goals. I know about what calories I need to be at, depending on how hard I'm training that week. I make sure to hit my protein. I have a protein shake. I should have said that every day. That's number one. I have a range if I'm going to be low that day. And for me, that works. And I think it's being able to cook at home every meal if I need to is awesome. I will say before I started dating my boyfriend, I would just buy out every meal. It was a glorious life he took from me. But now we cook all the time and he eats a very bland diet, not because he's super Mr. Nutrition, but he's into being fiscal and just simplicity because he's one of those weirdos that isn't hungry ever. So he has to force feed himself. So
just simple foods works for him.
God bless the man. Like, I'm trying to teach him how to eat more and how much fun it can be, but
yeah,
so it's a good balance. It's helped me a lot. I still eat out a good amount because I enjoy it. I've been known at work for McDonald's Wednesdays. So
I like it. Yeah, just having fun with food. Yeah. But I can understand too. It's like, okay, I love food and how it tastes, but the little bit of a regimen of eating at home provides you with that consistency for your body. I'm hearing you speak a lot of protein. So that's something that you feel the difference, and that, you know, hitting a protein goal definitely impacts you with your training and performance and recovery.
That's the big thing, is learning. And there's a huge push on teaching, educating everyone on recovery. And recovery is easily said, pretty much sleep, nutrition, and then gauging how hard your workouts are. And obviously, whether you're an athlete, recreational, I was going to say worker outer, that's good English. It affects how you plan all that. But like for me personally, like especially with the pandemic, I get more sleep because I'm not socializing much. I swear I have friends, Lindsay, still. I swear. But
of course you do. You're far too friendly.
But like I've been getting better sleep. We watch our nutrition. We plan our workouts, and there's such a push on recovery, and nutrition is a big part of it. But as you've seen, and as you probably preach, you don't have to be 100% strict, but if you have big goals, you still have to be pretty strict on, and you choose how. Me as a thrower, protein and calories. So I mentioned I have McDonald's. I actually plan that into my calories. I plan it that way. So it's not like I'm just willy-nilly going to get McDonald's. I look it up and I plan and I say, oh, I'm not going to have my smart food snack that day, or, you know, little things like that. And it's still strict in its own way. But if you ask my boyfriend, he'd be like, yeah, she does whatever she wants. But
yeah, it doesn't, because it doesn't feel strict to you.
Not that bad. No, not at
all. Yeah, it feels like something that I want to do this because it helps me and it feels better, but it doesn't feel like a restriction or limited, or I have to follow this diet or anything.
Not at all. And
it's huge.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, you choose what you want to have for goals. There's nothing wrong with that. And I'll say, even through all this, like since my surgery, as funny as it sounds, one of the things when you take the medication for thyroid, they're like, oh, you're going to lose weight. And I was like, oh, I'm going to slim down. And I ended up putting on 10 pounds after. And it's like, and again, I'm still watching everything I'm doing. That 10 pounds helped me throw far. It's all just gauging everything together. And obviously a big thing with throwers, and we're generally larger people from the start, it's getting comfortable with that. And the nutrition builds into that, knowing I'm doing everything that I feel is right in the moment for my training and the incredible things my body can do. Just because nutrition and body image kind of, I think they go together.
They do.
You have to deal with that all the time, I'm sure. Just realizing the incredible things my body does the way it is helps me be like, okay, that 10 pounds is okay for right now.
Yeah. Actually, no, that's a really, I think a really positive thing to hear is like, wait, I gained 10 pounds and it helped you. And this was one of your biggest and best athletic years of your life.
Yeah. It worked for me.
Yeah. Such an important thing to reflect on, not just the number on the scale, but what your body is doing and how it's performing.
Right? Yeah, big time. And when I was a young coach, and I don't know if this would be 100% appropriate nowadays with so many rules, but the big thing I used to do when I started coaching, you know, 22 years old, I'm not huge on like girls' rights, big time. But I think like women are awesome. They can do crazy shit. It's just sometimes they don't realize it. So I remember a big thing for me is when I started coaching and girls are a little afraid to lift heavy because they haven't been in that environment. I remember going up to all the guys on the team and be like, yo, go over to her and tell her how amazing her legs look. Like that she is lifting some heavy weights. She is squatting a lot. And like that little encouragement was a reminder. I'm like, damn, I look good. Look what I can do. And I don't know if that's appropriate in today's culture, but
I think so. Yeah. I think it's appropriate. So.
But that was like one of the things I used to always do when I coached. Like, just get confidence. Understand your body's freaking awesome.
Yeah. And be comfortable, you know, being proud of that too. You know, I think when it comes to body image, some people, like, if you're uncomfortable in your body, we hide it away, right? We cover it up. We try and like not focus on our body. And that might be helpful for a certain period of time. Like if things are just really touchy, like it might be helpful to definitely not focus on your body and focus on inner qualities and, you know, just, yeah, inner qualities and your brain and your personality. But then you get to this point where it's like, you got to start flaunting it.
Yes.
Because that does help you, you know, be proud of what you have, right? And so to say things, to look in the mirror and be like, damn, I'm sexy, or to be like, yeah, my legs are powerful AF, you know, and to really embrace that. And, you know, I've never been the type of person or woman that's like resonated with the word beautiful, or even like, and this is just me. Okay. So I've never been the person to even tell other friends like, you're so beautiful, or like, I feel beautiful today. Like, that's not my word. But when I tell friends like, damn, you look good, you know, that's a good, yeah, like that's it. Or like, you look strong. Like, and I'll, you know, I'll even use the word fit sometimes, which I know some people have an issue with. But like, to me, when I say you look fit, I'm like, I'm just saying like, you're impressing me. Like, everything about you is impressing me right now. And I think that it's nice to hear that from other people and from yourself.
100%. I agree all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. I also just want to say, I think like body image and body confidence, it's a journey for everybody. So what words and hearing from who, like, you have to hear it from yourself. Sometimes it's nice to hear it from other people, from other men, from other teammates. And sometimes it's just nice to tell yourself these things too.
Yeah. It's all a journey of figuring out what works for you, and you have to believe it yourself and feel it, but it is, not bad to hear it from other people. It's still nice to hear it. So it's all figuring out what works for you personally.
It's a good reminder just as female athletes to like lift each other up, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a big push for that right now, which is really nice. And it's just funny because throwers are in a different world than the track community. We're just a different kind of breed. So you gotta know you're hot shit. And there's nothing wrong with that. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm just curious to hear in your perspective, even though throwers might have a different outlook on body and eating than what we might think, like the runners who were on the same team here, you know, which is, it's kind of, that's why track and field is so interesting, because there's so many different types of athletes and types of personalities, and so many different needs. That's, I find that so exciting about track. But I'm just curious to know your experience, Lisa, because we do talk of disordered eating a lot on this podcast. And I'm curious to hear your experience in the throwing world. Like, have you witnessed that or seen that or been through any level of that, like, yourself?
I would definitely say, and I mean, we brought up body image a little bit just now because it links so much. But like, even growing, as I'm talking about like all this confidence I have and everything, I've always kind of had body images on myself. I mean, it's funny to think of the progression, even coming, I was a tomboy in high school, getting into college, like girls wearing spandex to me, like, and this is when the spandex started for people that don't realize it. I was like, no, people can't see all that. So I don't want, people aren't going to like that. So even just learning the body image of like, yo, rock it. That's what girls are doing. That's what people are. Everyone has different sizes. Like that was pretty hard for me. I was thinking, sorry. And I wasn't even a quote big thrower in the beginning of college. I was pretty average size. I think at that time I weighed like, so I'm 5'7" and I probably weighed then around 170, like beginning of college. So not that big in the world of throwing, but I think there's always that, and this is, it's very related to you because you're, to me, you're one of the gorgeous runners that was always around. I'm like, this is weird to say, but I'm going to say it on your podcast.
Thank you, Lisa.
But I was one of the only throwers at UMass early on. And so I hung out with what I would say all these gorgeous bodied sprinters and jumpers, other field eventers. And like, it was just very, I looked different. I looked very different. And I think I did struggle with that a little bit in college because I didn't have anyone else to look at that was like me. And I understand like you're an adult in college, but it's still, you're learning so much. You're growing. You don't know. You don't, you may not have the confidence quite yet. And I mean, I was always the outgoing, bubbly person, but like sometimes even just going out, socializing, like starting to wear tight jeans, I'm like, they look so different than me. Am I supposed to look like that? Am I doing this wrong? And I struggled with that in college. It was more of an, I think, internal. I didn't really express that to people, but it might turn into a thing of like, I'm just not going to go out to dinner with everyone because I don't want to put those clothes on. And it wasn't every weekend, but it did come up sometimes. And I think that's something that's always, some of us just develop as teenagers and it kind of sticks with you through life. And I think obviously now I'm in a whole different world that I'm comfortable, I'm confident, I understand. And sometimes I still have to look in the mirror and turn a little bit and be like, ooh, my butt looks good in that angle. So make sure people see me in that angle. But that's just life. It's just growing and learning. But I think college was probably some of the hardest times with that for me. And it was really as everyone grows and develops at that time. I just wasn't around other people like me as much. And that was confusing. Obviously now I'm totally fine with it. I should have been out in those tight jeans all the time, but just different world.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. Cause I definitely have a lot of people in college who listen and follow. And I think we all have our own unique stories of body image and body insecurity at some point in our life. And it's, you're such a role model right now for, you know, pursuing through that and being who you are today, but recognizing like, yeah, that was tough. And I think it's also another just good thing to remember is that even if you feel like nobody else around me looks like me, like there are other people out there that do. And, you know, I think there's a big push now, a good push for, you know, for recognizing that and for, it's difficult on sports teams, but just understanding like there's a diversity of bodies that are great athletes that are wonderful people. And this is why the push for body diversity is so important so that you don't feel alone, so that, you know, like, I'm not, you know, there's other people that do look like me and hopefully you can find them a little more easier nowadays, but just still having that, you know, again, like I said, I think you're just a role model for all, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, incredible role model.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
It's different. You just learn college. You're so young. You don't realize it. You don't know what's going on in the world. You mature as you go through it, but there's just so much going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And like you said too, for you, it was, you know, sure, there's some insecurities and it might've affected me a little bit, but not in, you know, hopefully saying not in any major, massive or detrimental ways. And if you listening feel like, okay, this has gone a step too far and like, you know, I'm hurting myself physically, socially, emotionally, you know, that's where like there's help for that, right? There's resources. And whether it's using your school resources or reaching out, you know, on your own, as we mentioned before, sometimes we have to find our own.
Oh, yeah. And there's so much out there now. And even like, even when I was in college, I mean, I was diagnosed depression and we found resources on campus. You had to go to therapists and you can find therapists anywhere. And as we talk about like nutritionists, dietitians, all that, it's out there. You can feel better. And I think that's important for people to understand. Don't continue struggle. Talk to someone. And we got really deep right now.
It's important though.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's important.
Yeah. We had free mental health resources at UMass at that time. I utilized it too for therapy. And it's also when I learned meditation was in college.
I don't know if you went to the sports specific ones or the health services one, but I'll say the sports specific ones. I used to go do some of that meditation. It was a one-on-one. And he would just put me to sleep every time. He would just let me nap on the ground. I would just fall asleep and I'd wake up and be like, how long? He's like, oh, just 20 minutes. You needed to sleep. So I just let you. I was like, cool. Thanks.
Yeah, I've done a lot. College was my intro to meditation. Then I've done a lot over the last decade with it. And it's funny because some people are like, I just fall asleep. And I'm like, well, that's fine. Like you just like, that's a good thing. Yeah. Like maybe you didn't reach this meditative state, but you still were successful in resting your body and mind, which is the whole point. So like, you don't have, just be grateful you got a nap in.
Exactly. I always loved it. I was like, oh, guess I can go practice nice and fresh now. But there's so much out there. There's tons of resources now. And even just I always say the interwebs, the internet, the internet, there's tons of stuff to get you started, but definitely reach out to a specialist whenever you need anything. It's so important. Been through pain. I totally understand.
Well, Lisa, this was so awesome to catch up to here and share with our listeners, like your journey with athletics, your journey with body image, your journey with nutrition too, and the things that have really helped you over this past year. And so you're going to continue training, fueling, staying injury free, and you're just going to keep crushing the field of track and field hammer and go for Olympics in 2024.
Why not? It's in Paris. I want some romance in my life.
Yeah. Paris and, you know, 4 more years, hopefully it'll be a more exciting Olympic. I shouldn't say that. The Olympics will still be exciting, but we know it's very difficult this year with COVID and no spectators there. Yeah. I feel bad as well. You know, there's super excited for all the Olympians that are going and getting their time to shine, because we'll all be watching. I mean, I was going to watch on TV anyways, so it doesn't really affect me at all. Yeah, for us, it doesn't. I just, you know, I hope that for those competing, they still feel that sense of like being at the Olympics. And, you know, we'll hope for 2024 for to see Lisa Wilson on the Olympic stage in Paris. That would cool. be absolutely amazing. Yeah. So Lisa, I usually end this podcast with a few rapid fire questions. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, but I won't answer fast, but I'll try. I'm ready.
I know. I need to stop calling them rapid fire questions because they're really not. It leads to further discussion.
Yeah. Okay. I'm ready.
Okay. If there was one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would it be?
Probably ice cream. It's the obvious, easy one. I just love ice cream. There's nothing else to really say. It's so good.
I love it too. I love it too. And it's a common answer on this podcast.
No, I can be normal in some ways. That was one.
Do you have a favorite flavor?
I always like things with either coffee or peanut butter.
Me too. I'm a coffee chocolate. And
ooh.
Is there such thing as coffee chocolate peanut butter ice cream? Because that would...
I've had it, yes. Or you can just be like me and just scoop peanut butter in.
Well, I've done that. Yes, done that for sure. Since me and Lisa are friends and we're reminiscing a bit, like, you know, obviously I grew up in Massachusetts, but now I live in Texas. And even living in Florida, you know, I miss in New England, Massachusetts, I miss the summertime ice cream stands.
They're everywhere.
The fresh dairy farms. And
it's glory.
And even soft serve, right? Like I love, you know, I to me, ice cream is different than soft serve, but I love soft serve. And in other parts of the country, they don't have that. I remember.
Don't they call it something else? There's, I can't think of what it's called. I know at like Disney, they call it like that Dole Whip, but it's like slightly different. It's not soft serve.
Yeah, Dole Whip is different. And we have frozen yogurt, but that's different too.
You want ice cream or gelato. Sometimes if you're feeling really fancy, oof.
Yeah, gelato's
going wild. I'm just thinking of the ice cream places. Like, because I lived in Rhode Island. That's where my main office is for work. And I mean, there's ice cream shops every town. There's local places. And you got to have your list and one a week.
Yeah.
It's important. Yeah.
So, I mean, ice cream, it's one of my, or it is my favorite food too. So I'm with you there. But there's also like, there's a nostalgia for like ice cream in New England, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire. I have a nostalgia for
that. Or even just going to Friendly's. There's still some open.
I love Friendly's. Yes. We have listeners up there. I miss it because you can't buy it in stores in Texas.
No.
So I love Friendly's. Vienna Mocha Chunk is my personal favorite.
That was one of my favorites. See, we're the same. It's fine.
All right. Next question. It seems like an obvious answer, but it might not be. What's your favorite sport to participate in?
So for people that don't know my background, I actually grew up playing football and I played for 9 years, and then basketball. I actually was not into track. I played it through high school. I did it through high school and just didn't realize until my senior year that I could get a scholarship for it. So basketball was always my main thing. Obsessed with basketball. I loved playing it, but I got like too into it. So when everyone else around me wasn't as into it, I'm like, this isn't the same. Basketball, love it.
Yeah. basketball your favorite to participate in? I actually meant to talk about this like earlier in the show, but now is a good time. Just your background with playing football and playing basketball. Like playing football as a girl, again, we're like, we've already mentioned your age, but back then, like, so like even now, still unique, but back then even different, you know?
Definitely. I would say, so I started like Pop Warner in third grade. So the kids I played with, I have an older brother, 2 years older. So he kind of paved the way for that. But I grew up playing with the same kids all my life. So I think for me, it was just easy in that realm. Cause I think the hardest thing, and it's very different nowadays, but girls breaking into the sport at an older age, it's, I'm going to use the word awkward. It's kind of awkward at first because you're figuring out like how you can fit in with your gender. Like even just like the shoulder pads, like when I was younger, kid, like boys trying to like make me uncomfortable, they'd be like, oh, how do you wear shoulder pads with boobs? And it's like, I just have longer ones and I smush my boobs. It's not a big deal. But like as if you're a little older and you're not used to that kind of like gab, it's awkward. It's very awkward. But I grew up with the same kids. I learned probably a lot of discipline. I learned camaraderie. Just being with the team, I loved it. I think football changed my life, but it's all I did. But I think it's such a good sport to learn that. And I think that's why I kind of transitioned to basketball well, is because smaller team, but same concept of camaraderie. It's just playing with the guys. It's just different. It's just different. And girls are evolving in sports that they start to get, I'm going to say better mentality. I don't know the best way to say that. But just being more dedicated, more into the sport, which when we were younger, it wasn't the same. It's evolved a lot. And I kind of got that from football. But I had an easy experience, except once we got in high school, the boys went through puberty and I stayed the same size and they all grew. So I didn't really play much, but I was on the team. It was fun. It's a fun sport.
I think one. First of all, I love track and field, and you can have a great team environment, but the other team sports like soccer, basketball, football, tennis, like I think there's an important time for that to learn, you know, working together as a team. So I think that's really important, whether it's in youth sports or in high school. And but I totally get what you're saying too about like playing with the boys at a young age of just like being a bit more competitive or sport focused, whereas I got competitive in high school for sure, but like my youth soccer teams, like it was split, you know, like half, I don't even know if it's fair to say half the girls, but half the girls were competitive and the other half were just like, are they dancing on the field or?
Yes. And that's the thing too, is that like, obviously there's different pockets of schools that everyone's competitive at the school. And if you're fortunate enough to grow up in one of those towns that's just naturally like that, awesome. But not everywhere is like that. And that's what's nice about having like AAU programs. Like I was on Team Mass, was my basketball team I was with from middle school on. And those girls were incredible. I mean, we were a nationally ranked team and stuff. And I would say like I was probably the worst on the team. Not that I was bad, but I was like on the bottom echelon of it. I just tried really hard. So they kept me around. But like getting into that was really nice. But you're not going to find that in every high school setting. And since we're more track, like there's so many more club programs now, and like you can get in with that group, which is awesome. So sports are totally changing and evolving in that regard. But you're just, when we were younger, you just weren't always gonna find that. You had to work for it on your own and then hope to get in with a good group. So I had that, I was able to have that with football, which was, I was very fortunate. My brothers, they were nice most of the time.
Awesome. So unique. And I'm glad that's like an experience that shaped you in a positive way. Yeah. So your favorite sport to participate in is basketball. What about as a spectator?
That's tough. Either football or track. I am one of those people that like, even in the track world, a lot of people don't enjoy sitting and watching meets. Like it's a weird thing, but like, I genuinely like watching, like, I'm like, they're about to do something that's the greatest thing in the world. Like they're about to run as fast as possible. This is amazing. Or even like, I grew up going to the Patriots games. So that's why I love football, is because my dad's had season tickets since I was born. So it's just kind of, that's just part of life, is just watching football. So football and track. I don't have a full answer.
No, it's good. Both amazing sports. I love watching track meets live, but even also, like, honestly, the Olympic trials, like watching them on TV, because there's always something going on. So it's just like, what's next? What's next? There's always something. And kind of what we were speaking of before, there's so many different types of athletes when you're watching track and field. So it's so impressive. You know, run fastest, run longest, jump highest, throw furthest. Like, there's just so many different, things and something always going on. So, yeah.
And what I also think is, like, fascinating, and I'll do this when I watch other sports too, but, like, just even watching the athletes warm up, because, like, I've coached all levels and I participate and I just enjoy strength conditioning in general, but, like, just watching the athletes warm up and be like, hey, this is how they taught us to coach, or like that person doing that jump is just like incredible. Like, do you see how high their vertical jump is? Like, even like the sprinters, when they're just doing their little hops before they sprint, it's like, damn, that boy can jump. It's just like, it's just incredible to see the different feats of the body, or relate it to like what you coach or what you teach. And even like at Patriots games, me and my dad have like our traditional lap we do. We get our hot chocolates, we walk around, we go stand in the same spot, and we watch them warm up, the other team, and like different things. And even just like, because I work for Perform Better, so like mini bands, we sell all that kind of stuff. Like, even just seeing some teams do warm ups with mini bands, I'm like, this is fascinating to me. Like, I just genuinely enjoy it. And I don't know why I got on that ramble, but yeah.
Cool. Just genuinely impressed with all that it takes to be an athlete. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
All right. And final question is, if there's a female athlete out there that you want to give a shout out to for just being inspiring or role model, can be a high level athlete or somebody in your personal life, who would that be and why?
That's tough. I would say one of my role models would definitely be Amber Campbell, who is one of the, I will say, famous women's U.S. hammer throwers. I would be at meets of her even when I was a younger athlete. So she's been, I think, three or four. And now I feel bad if you remember. Yeah. And she competed up until she was like 35, 36. I watched her. I'd be at like smaller meets with her out west and all this different stuff. And just like, she just seemed so happy, so in love with the sport. You know, she'd throw a foul into a tree at Mount Sac. I don't know if other hammer throwers are listening. They might remember this meet. This is in like 2014 or 15. And she just like took a bow for the crowd. Like, just like, she was just so cool and so in love with the sport. And like, I just always loved watching her, whether it was just in between throws, competing, talking with people. And even at like 2016 Olympic trials, I sat up in the bleachers to watch the finals, and she won the trials and like threw a PR. I think she was 35 at the time. And I was just so amazed. I was like, this woman just did the best thing in her life in hammer throw. And she's near the end of her career and she's still getting better. And it's just so amazing. And she's just such a good person. I didn't really say much in that whole thing, but Amber Campbell, love her. She's amazing. Yeah. Huge role model.
Amber Campbell, for sure. I can see why she's your role model for sure, too. And in both personality, how she handles competition. And, you know, I'm just going to throw the age card out there and say that she's still crushing it, just as you are and just as you're going to continue to do. So I don't always throw this in there, but I'm going to give a shout out to you, Lisa, not just for being on the podcast, but just for being an inspirational female athlete. Again, like, I was just, when I watch things on the Olympic trials, I'm always like a little starstruck. And then I was like, that's my friend. Like, it was just so amazing. And so I'm just so proud of your journey and just want to say congratulations for all that you've accomplished, and so excited.
Thank you. Oh, you're going to make me cry. It was, you're like, I did it on purpose. It was just, this year has just been incredible, ups and downs, so many ups. And like, just knowing, like, we haven't talked in years, and knowing that you watch, I'm going to actually cry, that you watch my Olympic trials is really cool. And it's been amazing how many people have reached out to me in the last few weeks, and just how many people that, like, you're into track, so you probably would have watched some of it anyways, but like, you might not have watched a hammer throw. So many people that don't know anything about track, like, I got messages, like, we're at the age, we have a lot of friends with kids, and like people are like, we watched, like I got my kids to watch, and like they wouldn't be introduced to this sport. Like, it's just so cool. And I'm like, I joke around about how I love to brag and all this stuff, but like everything that I've gone through this year has just been incredible. And thank you.
You're welcome, Lisa. Yeah. You deserve it all.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast. I should have asked you this before, but I'll just ask now, like, do you have any social media sites that if people are interested in following your athletic career or anything like that, that they can do? I don't know if your social media is all personal. Yeah. Or.
Oh, no. As I just said, I love to brag. Yeah. So I have one of the most common names in the world, Lisa Wilson. So on Facebook, I'm kind of hard to find, but definitely look me up. On Instagram, I pronounce it as Lee Marie Wee, but it's just L-I for Lisa. Marie is my middle name and W-I for my last name. So Lee Marie Wee. Definitely follow me. I try to be entertaining as possible and post throwing things and working out, and shoot me a message. I love to talk about everything. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll include that in the show notes too, if you want to reach out to Lisa and be inspired by her as a person and her athletic journey as well.
Thank you.
And then also, Lisa, since you work for Perform Better, you do like sales equipment for strength training and just like things like that, right? Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. So I work for MF Athletic, which Perform Better is part of that. So track and field equipment, gym equipment, anything you guys need help with, definitely reach out to me. Literally anything on the Perform Better side. I've done basement gym designs. I've helped with performance facilities, which is really fun and really cool. So flooring, equipment, anything, especially in these crazy times. And we have a sale coming up soon. So if you want a flyer, just shoot me an email.
Yeah, Perform Better, their equipment, like every gym I've ever been to in my life has some sort of Perform Better piece of equipment. So you guys sell all across the country. Am I right?
Yep. Yep. Just about everywhere. Anything you need. We're based out of Rhode Island, but we can ship anywhere. You can look at our website if you want an idea what we have, but we sell even more than that. So just let me know. I love to help.
Since you just outfitted your house, yeah, as you said, with your own home gym. If anybody's interested in building their own home gym, get in touch with Lisa and she can tell you the best ways to do that and the best products to get you that. So we'll include your information in the show notes as well.
Cool. That's perfect. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lisa, for coming on the show. I really hope you enjoyed that episode and thanks for listening. But before I let you go, I have free resources that you can have access to right away, right now, so that you can start fueling your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. First, I have your Red S recovery race. If you've ever wondered if you might be struggling with Red S, curious to learn more, or know you have Red S and are looking to recover fast, then you can head to www.riseupnutritionrun.com/Red S and download the Red S recovery race. See how you place and figure out the next steps to recovery. Plus, while there, I have a few other great resources for you, including 3 nutrition secrets that every elite athlete swears by, and access to our private Facebook community, Female Athlete Nutrition. So again, to gain access to all of this, head to riseupnutritionrun.com/reds. That's /REDS. And you can gain access and get the help you need fast. Too many girls and women and female athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. Become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and I'll see you next time.